Yeah, warriors been taking it down. Raise your voices and stand up this town. We're the champions of craft beer and sport. Tolkien Audio, we hold down the fort.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome inside an all-new episode of the Tolkien Audio Podcast. Coming to you from our studio in beautiful Bytown, Canada, Matt Robinson sitting across the table today from our buddy Matt Conisvito. What's happening, buddy?
Oh, excited to be back,
yeah.
My man.
Yeah. What was it? Last fall you were in for the first time? Is that about right? October or something like that?
Oh, man. Time's a flat circle. I can't remember. I remember I had a great time, drank some great beers, talked lots of sports, lots of music. It was a great time, and I'm just pumped to be here again, my friend.
Well, we're going to do the music thing again today, because you and I think we squeezed in like 15 minutes of sports at the end, because we ended up having enough music stuff.
It's a lot of music themes.
100%, man.
TSN 1200.
Yeah, and how do you program a show? And we'll link to that episode in the show notes, because I thought that was really interesting, you know, how you decide on day-to-day, you know, what songs are going to get played, and sometimes you'll kind of thread it together through, you know, an entire 3-hour show, and sometimes it's more just, you know, whatever sort of coming to you.
Trying to cater to my host AJ.
Sure.
Who,
specific tastes.
Oh my God. He's so on the. So, April 30th, I started the show with NSYNC.
Okay.
Because tomorrow it's going to be May. It's like the one time a year that I feel like I got to play. It's going to be me.
Oh,
a little NSYNC.
That took me a second.
And AJ was so angry. He was so angry. He was yelling at me. He was like, what are you doing? This is just wrong.
Was he calling out for some more Wasp or something?
Oh, he was so pissed. Just so pissed. And yeah,
see, I thought when you said NSYNC on April 30th, that was still in the meat of the Leafs possibly being eliminated by the Bruins. I thought you were going to hit the bye-bye-bye maybe.
Well,
you would have been a little premature at that point.
Exactly.
But,
couldn't do it at that point.
Right.
But he was mad because it was a Leafs game day.
Right.
And we've been playing Smokin' by Boston. And like last year, years ago, we'd play Ride the Lightning, cheering for the Lightning on game days.
Sure.
Against, we'd play a metal cover of Thundercats for the Florida
I remember
Panthers,
that one. Yeah.
And so this year it's been Smokin' by Boston. And AJ was like, what are you doing playing this crap instead of Boston? And like, we end the show with Smokin' because we want the Bruins to smoke the Leafs.
Well, he was pretty, you guys were good enough to have me on the show there a couple of weeks ago in the middle of that Boston and Toronto series. And he was pretty hard on the fact that I had asked you to play the Steve Thomas coming out of commercial. Everyone else was getting to share their Bob Cole memories. I thought it was only fair. I should be able to do the same, but he wasn't having it. He was not impressed.
I wasn't impressed either.
No,
I
of
had
course
it,
not.
I grabbed the audio.
Yeah.
I had it in the system.
Yeah.
And I couldn't bring
Just
myself
couldn't do
to play.
It.
I couldn't. I mean, the Leafs broke my heart so many times.
Yeah.
In
Mine
those
too,
battles of Ontario.
Oh, yeah, no. Okay.
I had a lot of, I mean, as anyone who grew up in Ottawa.
Yeah.
Had lots of friends who were Leafs fans, and they'd come
God
out of
them.
The woodwork
sure.
in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And, just
like
be,
rats or cockroaches just coming out of the foundation.
It's a very apt comparison.
We're here. Yeah, no, it's true. But you guys actually then rammed me with the Alfredson.
Yeah, into the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
Winning a third round series, something the Leafs have never done.
It's true. It's true. We're not going to talk about that today. We got beers here, though. These come from our friend at the Nita Beer Company. Andy's been on the show a bunch of times. He has supported this show for a while. We are happy to support him by drinking his beers. And
yes,
he actually
please.
Hosted last June my 40th birthday for me over there at the brewery. And I think he turned out to be okay with that as well. I think we drank enough to keep him profitable that day.
That's a stretch.
Having a crowd in there. Yeah, we did all right. So this comes from the Nita Beer Company. You and I are both having the same thing. I don't think, I think you mentioned outside in the green room there that you haven't had this one before.
I haven't logged it on Untappd.
Okay.
And that's how I keep track of, I can't remember when I started, so I guess there's a possibility I've had one, but I haven't ranked it, so
okay.
I'm looking forward to cracking one.
So this is their OPA, the Ottawa Pale Ale, a balanced IPA they're talking about here, and well, let's just get into it, because I want to talk to you about the Untappd app, actually, before we get into the music thing.
Oh, is there a better sound than that, Matty? I don't think so.
We'll just pull the curtain back here for the audience. You and I are recording on a Friday afternoon, too, so fits just about nice, man. That's what I'm looking to hear on a Friday afternoon. But
man.
How often do you use the... Are you still... Like, I go through phases with Untappd, where I'm sort of like, I got to log this. I want to make sure I remember... Especially if I really like something, I want to make sure I've written it down somewhere, right? That I can go back and remember that I like that so I can find it again or whatever else. And then I just, I kind of go through phases where I can't be bothered to keep checking things in. So you use it a lot?
I was very, very late to the Untappd party. I didn't jump on board when it first became popular.
And I guess I should say, for people who aren't familiar, it's like the Facebook of beers. You check in your beers. You kind of rate what you thought of it. You can leave a little note if you want. And
Goodreads for books.
There you go.
It's you keep track of what you're drinking.
Yep.
You can rate it. You can post a picture if you want. I almost never do that.
Oh, right.
But so I was late to the party, and I use it anytime I have a beer I haven't had before that I haven't logged.
Okay.
If I'm having, you know, something that if I'm having a Sun Split or something that I've had a million of, I'm not logging every time I have it.
Yeah.
But I like to keep track of what I've had.
Right.
And so then if I'm at a bar that doesn't have something I've never had before, I can know.
I got a little reference with me.
Exactly. Exactly. And I also will often order based on what I have and haven't had.
So same, yeah.
I'll be at a pub or something, and I'll see something that I have had.
Right.
And I'll be like, I know I'm going to love that, but I want to.
This came up recently on the show. I don't remember whether it was Lloydy or just talked to somebody about this on the show a couple of weeks ago. And people who don't do the craft beer thing always kind of give you the raised eyebrow, like, if you already know there's one here that you loved last time, why wouldn't you just because that one's new. I might like it more. Like,
give me the mystery box.
I have to try the mystery box always. So what do you think on the first poll there, the OPA?
I think it's very, very well described. It's super balanced.
Yeah.
I really, really like this.
Okay. So shout out to Andy over at the Nita Beer Company, as always, for hooking us up for today's show. Like I said, the last time you were in here, you and I ended up talking music more than just about anything else. And I'd had a few different guests in before, Creech and Bunda and some of these people, who had said to me, that's what's going to happen the first time you have Matty K in here. And it was because I'm always sort of inserting these weird musical references into the show where they don't belong. And they'll always kind of look at me and go, you got to get Conus Vita in here. You guys will have no problem talking music, and that's an area. And even then, when you were in the first time, I could tell, even I was in out of my depths a little bit. Like, you had references, and I know that even listening to 1200, like, your, I think, musical knowledge is more well-rounded than mine. And I think my musical tastes are pretty well-rounded. Like, I'm open-minded to a lot of styles, a lot of things, but I'm not as knowledgeable about things outside of, you know, what I would consider my wheelhouse, right? Or things like that. Have you always been, like, you know, you've ended up in sports talk radio. When you were going through, I'm sure I asked you this the first time, did you envision yourself as more of a music jock? Has it always been like a passion of yours? Or, you know, how does that sort of come to be the way that it has?
So it's funny. I've always been a music guy.
Right.
Like, always. One of my early formative memories is driving to Expo's spring training down in Florida with my dad.
Yeah.
And 6 or 7 Led Zeppelin songs came on in a row on the radio, and I was banging along on the dashboard with Bonzo and like listening to my dad's vinyl, listening to a lot of Shea 106 growing up.
Sure,
and guessing who the band was. That was a game that in the car we would play all the time. And it got to the point, like, it wasn't enough that I would know it was the Beatles. I'd have to know which Beatle was singing the song. And so from a young age, music was just something that I really, really clicked with.
Right.
And I was working at KFC in the kitchen, and I'd always have the radio on, even though we weren't supposed to. And my manager at the time was the one who, she brought in a little like pamphlet and was like, stop messing around here and sign up for radio broadcasting.
Right.
And so I got into radio broadcasting because of my love of music, and ended up, I mean, I'm a huge sports fan as well.
Sure.
And the opportunity to work in sports talk was incredible.
Yeah.
And really loved that. But what brought me to radio and broadcasting to begin with was a love of music. Mm. And it's interesting because one of the first things we learned at Algonquin College with our prof Ian Barry, who has since unfortunately passed away.
Right.
But he was like, if you're here because you want to play songs you like, There's the door. Like, that's not what's going to happen.
It's funny, and on the first day of our radio college in Belleville down at Loyalist, Professor John Henderson said to us on day one, if you're here to make money, there's the door.
There, that was there as well.
Yeah.
I think that was number one. Right. I think plain stuff you want to hear
yes.
was number two yeah. on the list. But it's ironic because producing the afternoon show on TSN 1200,
yeah.
I get to play,
you
what
play
I
whatever
want.
You want. Yes, yeah, that's true.
And obviously we're not playing full songs. It's
right.
a little bumper music and stuff.
Sure.
But it's ironic how that turned out, but yeah music is something that I've been lucky to go to so many different concerts and see so many bands that have been formative for me and
right.
have become formative. So it's music's definitely something that has always really clicked with me.
It's funny for me, it's almost the exact opposite. I went to radio school because I would drive around often enough in my dad's truck, or when I was working, for the family construction business as a teenager, I would have like a little portable radio I'd be dragging around because I was painting shit or refueling things
yeah.
or cleaning off the trucks and machines or whatever, you know, the grunt work kind of stuff. And I would always be listening to either the Fan 590 down in Toronto or Talk 640. And if I was in the truck with my dad, it would be maybe News Talk 1010 or 680 News.
Mm.
It was always AM radio. And that is what locked in my desire to do this kind of thing, right? What you and I are sitting here doing now. And, you know, I think I was realistic. Obviously, your dream is to be the next Bob McCown.
Yeah.
But you know that's a one in a million shot. But could I just get into it, right? Could I just do some sports talk and whatever? And so my musical horizons don't really expand until I get to college, right? Because you're not working talk radio at the college radio stations. Down in Belleville in year one, you're working a radio station. And I think they did this just to prove the point that you mentioned a few minutes ago, that you're not going to be playing
no.
what you want to play. So the internal station, which is what you did in year one, that only played around the radio station and in this one little lounge outside the Loyalist College radio station, it was 80s country.
Oh, that's a tough beat.
And you know what is funny, and we're going to get into this as we talk, I grew up in a country music household. My mom loved country music. My dad, as I said, didn't really, at that point, still listen to a lot of music. He was listening to talk radio and stuff like that. So 80s country wasn't really my wheelhouse, but I still to this day have a soft spot for like 1992 through 97. We're talking Alan Jackson, Garth Brooks, Brooks and Dunn, Alabama, right? These sorts of bands. And so the 80s country was still a reach for me, but I don't think it was as crazy as it was for a lot of the kids coming in to work. And as you said, it's get ready. You're not going to love the stuff that you play half the time. You take the job you get and you play with their catalog is. And in year two, they did have a station that went out and covered most of the city, and that was rock alternative. And so that was a lot more fun. But it was through that, and obviously just in college, you meet people and go through different experiences and stuff like that, where my music horizons or tastes or whatever start to expand a little bit. But I showed up there specifically looking to at least get the basics down and learn how to do talk radio and stuff. So it's interesting, the opposite routes we've sort of taken to end up here today.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I was always a big, I guess not always, but I have strong memories of when I was finally able to start driving into school listening to T-Gore
sure,
on
yeah.
Team 1200 with
the OG
Jungle.
T-Gore.
Oh, yeah, yeah. with the old yes or no game. And so as we said, like the music is really what drew me in
sure.
originally. And just when it comes to 90s country music, I've got some honorable mentions that we'll get to
okay.
for my, but Garth Brooks, I saw Garth Brooks in Boston, his second show of the night at the TD Garden. I think he went on at like 11:30 at night.
Oh, wow.
And one of the more incredible shows I've been to.
I saw Garth here in Ottawa on that
I was
last
at that
tour.
Show as well.
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay. The one thing you would say about Garth, and you would have said it even before you saw him live, much more of a great showman than a great singer, right? And it's not to say I didn't enjoy the concert, but you would never go, that guy's vocals are best in the biz or whatever. But he's a showman. He knows how to put on a great
show. He puts on a heck of a
yeah,
show.
Yeah.
yeah. And I think I disagree a little
okay.
bit because was Trisha with him?
Yep.
Yeah. So the way he was
she
able
still
to...
Looked good.
The way Garth was able to command the arena with his voice... I felt that I would probably tend to agree with you until Trisha came out. And nothing against her and her voice. Like, she sounded great. But she didn't have that same command to me.
I thought she killed it. I thought her singing was... This is so interesting that we saw the same show and took away... Now, he was here...
I think he played like four or five shows.
Yeah, anyway. So we ended up... We missed out because I think he was here Friday, Saturday, and then he was going to be here Sunday night, and they added a Sunday afternoon show.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up missing out. We couldn't get tickets. And it was my sister and I who were trying to be able to take my mom, who had always loved him back when... And he hadn't toured at that point in like 10 or 15 years or whatever it had been.
Yeah.
And so when they added the Sunday afternoon show, we got managed to grab a few of those. So we're on the floor, and towards the end of that show, his voice was starting to break. You could tell that he was starting to, you know, he hadn't toured in a while. And I can remember us talking on the way home, like, that was awesome. I'm glad we're not at the Sunday night show, right? Like,
interesting.
He might be... I don't know how to phrase it. He's not toast. He's going to be okay. But, like, that's going to be tough.
He needs some tea and honey.
Right.
Yeah.
This has been a rough weekend for him. He's gone however many nights in a row. But I remember, like, I thought Trisha, because she came out, Trisha Yearwood, halfway through, did a set of, wasn't a lot, four or five songs maybe. And then they did a couple together.
Yeah.
And I thought she was fantastic. And as far as, like, vocal performance went, I thought, She was better. But
that's really interesting. Yeah. Because, again, I saw him in Boston.
Yeah.
And then saw him
same
in
tour
Ottawa.
Or earlier?
I think it was... the Boston show is probably about a year beforehand.
Okay. Because there was a time there where he wasn't touring at all from, like, 2000 through whatever year this was that we went.
Yeah.
2013, 14.
I know the drummer had the same rig with, like, the hamster wheel sort
right,
of
okay.
thing. But... I think we were at the first Saturday show when he was in Ottawa,
okay.
So it would have been his second of five.
So you caught him a little earlier than we did. And...
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, you know, just to bring the audience up to speed here a little bit, I asked you to kind of pick your three favorite concerts, and I was going to do the same.
Based on set list, and that's important, and I have to jump in because this got my brain working the way my brain works, and I was like, I could do like seven different podcasts.
Yes.
Different
when
parameters
we might, as we go.
But like greatest single moments at concerts would be an entirely different list.
And I like for me it's a lot of like vibe based too, right? Like, do I remember every moment of this concert? Was it the best show I ever saw? Maybe not, but like the people I went with and the weekend around it or things like that can change your perspective as well. So you're right. The set list thing is important here.
That's what I was working around.
Okay. And that's totally fair. But really it was a takeoff point. And I had a feeling that when you and I just got going, it would more so devolve into just trading stories and things we've seen and things that we thought were really good. So we'll see where this goes. But that's the framework that we're going to take off from. But I do want to start you with, do you remember the first concert you ever went to?
So the first concert I ever went to was Sharon Lois and Bram and the Elephant Show. And I don't really count that one.
That is so funny because... I had totally forgotten, but now that you say that, I think I saw Sharon Lois and Bram too at like the Oshawa Civic Center, maybe.
I can't even. I was so young, I can't even remember.
Like really young.
All
like,
I remember is Elephant coming out with gigantic sunglasses, and
there was some sort of tour like that.
Yeah, and some skinny.
How old are you? Is there a chance we saw them on the same tour too?
I was probably
is that age redacted here.
I would guess it was probably like 91, 92.
Okay.
That sort of era.
I could see that. Although that's a little later than I... Like, that'd make me eight. Yeah, maybe. Maybe that was it.
Yeah, but feel like I was...
But it was local. Like, we didn't go into Toronto for that. This was in Oshawa at, like I said, maybe the Civic Center, or there are a couple little theaters down there that hold...
I feel like it might have been, like, the Congress Center or something here.
Okay.
When they came through. I can't remember.
But not like TD Place, right? Like, they're not doing 10,000 a night.
No, I don't think it was a big, like, Civic Center do.
No.
It was almost like a convention center sort of feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same, I think. So, if we ignore Sharon Lois and Bram,
I saw Our Lady Peace.
Okay.
With my best friend growing up, Alex, and his aunt. And I was looking through my old ticket stubs that I have saved in anticipation of doing this show, and I couldn't find
it was quite a
the
collection,
stub. Oh, I only sent you a photo of like a small snippet.
But it was
of
eclectic,
the standouts,
right? Like it was.
Oh yeah. But I would guess I was in grade 5, grade 6, so I would guess it was about, you know, 95, 96, thereabouts.
Okay.
So that was my first rock concert, was going to see Our Lady Peace.
So my first concert is not a rock concert. As I told you, grew up in a country household.
Randy Travis?
Oh, man.
I grew up on Randy Travis.
Who
love
didn't?
Randy Travis. Oh, man.
I'm going to love him forever. Forever and ever, amen. This was the very early days, and I only discovered this this week when I was doing my prep for this show and looking around. The Molson Amphitheater, this is June 2nd, 1995. So I am finishing up grade 6, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, from what I could tell, kind of looking around, just doing some quick research, the Molson Amphitheater, which is now known as Budweiser Stage, it's had a few different names, but it's the one at Ontario Place, the outdoor concert venue down in Toronto. I think it had only opened about a month before. So very early days of the venue. I believe the first concert was mid-May, and I think it was Bryan Adams is my... You know, it was hard to pin some of this stuff down exactly, and I only had limited time to check it out. But this was June 2nd. I went to see Alan Jackson.
Oh.
And opening for him, a very young, not yet established to what she would become, Faith Hill. Was the opening act.
That's quite the twin bill.
It was quite a ticket.
One of my best friends is, her favorite song of all time is Chattahoochee.
Yeah, everybody loves the Chattahoochee, man.
It gets
hotter than a
hoochie-coochie.
Yeah, the next couple times you have me on 1200, I know what kind of intro music I'm going to be getting.
Oh, AJ's going to be so
AJ's
pissed.
Going to be furious. That makes it even better. My date for that particular concert, my mom.
Nice.
Went with my mom, my aunt and uncle, my aunt's sister and her husband, and then another woman and one of my closest friends, because my dad and her dad didn't want to go. couldn't really care less about these live concerts, certainly not for country music. Didn't want to take the GO train in from Oshawa to sit at this sort of thing. So I got drafted to go, but I'm not saying by any means that I had to be convinced. I was fine to go see Alan Jackson, thought that was going to be fun, see the new concert venue. And I don't remember much of the set list, and if you go now and look around, like, you can pretty easily find a lot of, especially modern concerts, you can find the set list, right? Mm-hmm. It's not hard.
Oh, I've done some research.
Okay, so this was hard to find. I couldn't, they said, the one website I visited said, we can show you what the set list was 2 weeks earlier in St. Louis.
Okay.
But it's not like now where the internet was easily available and people were coming home and uploading their set lists and what they saw. So it gets a little sketchier the earlier back you go. But this was the era, for sure, of Gone Country, of Chattahoochee. I think both of those come off of one album. Tall, Tall Trees is a song I remember from that. Neon Rainbows,
okay.
One of Alan Jackson's big hits. So he's still in 95, at least in the country world, a big deal. And he would stay there for a couple more years, but it would fall off for him. Like, he's still a prominent, but he's...
I think he's got a bar in Nashville, a honky-tonk.
Who doesn't?
It's true. But I think that Alan Jackson was the one who really sort of kicked off the whole Broadway scene. And he was the first star to, like, get a bar on Nashville that did in Nashville on Broadway that did live music.
Okay,
don't fact check me. I could be making this up. But
well, we're gonna do a lot of that here.
I was in Nashville for a wedding.
Nice
last
spot
year
for a wedding,
and
that's
sweet. It was great. Yeah. It was great, and yeah, saw Alan Jackson's bar. So did a little bit of digging at the time.
Right,
but my brain is a sieve these days. So
at the time that you're seeing Our Lady Peace, same year, is that coming off of Clumsy? Is that Navid? Where are we at with, do you remember what was being played?
So I feel like my memory is they might have played a song or two off of Happiness Is Not a Fish That You Can Catch. But I'd have to look at the release date for that album to be able to know that for sure.
Right.
I do have, of the honorable mention set lists,
right,
I have an OLP show that I went to in 2003. Where they, or sorry, no, in 2000.
Okay.
Where they played Stealing Babies, which is one of my favorite OLP songs.
I'm not even sure I know that OLP song.
It's off of Happiness Is Not a Fish okay. that you can catch. Not yeah. my favorite album.
Right.
Like, I'm a Naveed and a Clumsy guy.
Same, yeah.
But I used to play drums, and Jeremy Taggart, drummer of OLP, yeah. was one of the drummers that made me want to play drums.
Okay.
And we had him on the station on 1200 years ago on Kevin Hames' golf show.
Really?
And Taggart, of course, did a bunch of stuff. I believe it was with 1050, but with Jay and Dan.
Jay and Dan on their podcast initially, yeah.
And he talked a lot about how one of his favorite personal favorites was Stealing Babies. It's a song he did. He drummed with Elvin Jones
right.
on that song.
Okay.
And so that was something. So I might be getting things mixed up, and maybe my first show was 2000, although I feel like I did one before high school. But yeah. Like
I've only seen them once, and it was also in 03, which you initially said was...
I also saw them in 03.
Okay.
And that was the tour with the Trailer Park Boys opening for them.
Oh, wow. Opening.
Yeah. The Trailer Park Boys would come out and do some comedy bits, and then Bubbles would sing Closer to the Heart by Rush.
I saw them at, and I've talked about this on the show before, so I won't go too in-depth on it, but there was, before the big Rolling Stones SARS-Stock concert in Toronto,
mm-hmm.
there was an event in June that was similar, but not anywhere near as big in profile, didn't have the Rolling Stone, but it was meant to be a draw people back to Toronto,
yep.
Show you it was a safe place to be. And it was dueling concerts at the ACC and at the Dome at the same time.
Hmm.
And at the Dome, which is where I was, they had a lot of things that were... It was more meant for younger people, at least at the time, when I was still reasonably young. The Swollen Members.
Okay.
Our Lady Peace. Actually, the Bare Naked Ladies were there. You could argue whether they were geared towards young people or not. But the Hip was the big finish. But all kinds of, you know, big Canadian acts. Avril Lavigne was doing her first album, I think, at the time, or, you know, had just become a thing. But over at the ACC, they had, like, Sarah McLachlan and, you know, Sarah Harmer and, you know, more of a contemporary deal. But they would alternate between the two. So you would watch the Swollen Members at the Dome, and then they would go off stage. The next performer at the ACC would start.
And
that would get put
screens?
Up on screen.
Nice.
Yeah, and you could get up and you could watch it if you were into it, or you could go get a beer or you know, something to eat or whatever, and then they'd come back, and at the ACC, they'd watch our next show. And so they went back and forth like that. And so Our Lady Peace, I think, was second from the top at that point behind the Hip on the Dome set. I believe Sarah McLachlan was the main event over at the ACC. But that I think that's the only time I've seen Our Lady Peace live.
I've seen them definitely three times.
Okay.
I've got the ticket from 2000, went in 03, and then when the Rolling Stones came to Ottawa and played Lansdowne, Our Lady Peace was one of the openers
okay.
for that show.
Nice.
So that was the third.
What year would that have been?
Oh.
Rough. Even, like, can you give us an era?
I feel like it was around.
It was pre-renovation.
Yeah, it was because they messed up the lines on the field.
Oh.
And so the Renegades had to come back and play a game, and the lines were crooked.
I'm sure that really hurt the Renegades. Otherwise, they were going to kill it that year.
Yeah, but the other band that opened is a French band called Les Trois Accords, who I'm
really?
A huge fan of.
Okay.
And at the time, Les Trois Accords, they were the first opener, and it was the first time I'd seen them. They only had one album at the time. And their most famous song is probably Saskatchewan, but my buddy and I were so pumped to see them, and I've seen them five or six times now.
Are you fluent in French?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I grew up speaking French.
Okay.
In French immersion
right.
in the East End, Henry Larson Elementary School.
Okay.
Shouts. but it was hilarious because it was a Stones show, so there are a lot of older people in our section. We were in the south side stands.
Right.
And my buddy Sam and I are singing along to all these Trois Accords songs, like, full volume. And the people around us are like, who is this band and why do these two guys know them? And I remember the lead singer at the end of their set, and they were awesome. said to the crowd, like, all right, we're Les Trois Accords. Thank you. That was a lot of fun. But don't go anywhere. There are more bands coming. Don't, like,
in case you
know, you probably want to leave. But and I remember really, really appreciating that they knew they weren't the stars there. It was like Justin Timberlake at the SARS concert.
Oh, man.
Where he apologized before he came on. Don't worry, it'll be over before you know it.
Yeah. And I guess, if I remember correctly, it was because one of the Rolling Stones' daughters really liked him, is the reason he was invited.
I think so.
But he was a fish. It was Rolling Stones, AC/DC.
I was at that
Rush.
Show.
Were you?
Yeah. Tea Party.
Look at this fucking guy.
Last She Can. Sam Roberts.
Sam Roberts.
So
is that everything I've ever gone to? Every music festival in this country.
But you're right. Rush was there, and they had laundry machines on stage for some reason.
That's right.
How
many kilometers from the stage were you?
Pretty far. Pretty far. I was like right before the first set of massive screens.
Okay.
So closer, considering we didn't make it in time to see Sam Roberts. We made it. I think we got there during Last She Can's set, and I had never heard of them.
Yeah.
But I think Blue Rodeo played there as well, if memory serves.
That could be.
But Dan Aykroyd was hosting.
Yep.
And this is going to be a spoil a potential future podcast, but one of the greatest individual moments I've ever seen in concert was Sass Jordan played.
Yep.
And she played Make You a Believer and had Jeff Healey come out.
Oh, wow.
And Jeff Healey ripped, like, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about the solo.
You always had the guitar down on his lap, right?
Yeah.
He played it instead of hung up. You would sort of have his fingers on it and, you know, just played it differently with his blindness so that he could, and he would kill it.
Like, but he got so into the solo during Believer and like half stood up and was rocking out.
Yeah.
And that was just such an incredible moment.
I have no memory of that. That's wild.
Yeah. I've got the DVD, and I believe, I'm sure you could find it on YouTube well now. Everything's on YouTube.
Yep.
But that's one of my honorable mention sets. Not the Stones. The Stones were okay at that show. AC/DC was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I
watched it on TV. I remember thinking AC/DC killed it.
Absolutely stole the show.
Yeah.
And like the standout from that set was they played The Jack and did like an extended version. And I think like Angus had boxers that had a maple leaf on them, and it was just an unbelievable. It was a long and a hot day. But
I remember that part. Like I said, I wasn't down there, but I remember the weather reports all week. Like, it was huge news that this thing was happening, right?
Yeah.
And they're talking, it's going to be 33 degrees, and like there was people coming on stage and whipping water bottles out into the crowd, and like, there's 300,000 people here. Like,
well, and then
you don't have quite enough water, I don't think.
The water bottles were getting whipped back at Justin Timberlake, both during his set.
It was such a weird choice. Like, how do you not see that coming? But B, I guess if you're up that close, it's hot, you've been there all day, you're waiting for, but at the same time, could just chill out, right? Like,
But
it's not, I guess my point is, it's not like you could just walk away, go get a beer and hit a piss, and you're going to lose your spot up that close.
You couldn't
close,
get water either.
You couldn't go anywhere.
It was a huge problem at the show.
Yeah.
But he came out with the Stones when they were playing Miss You and was singing with Mick.
Right.
And it was actually really good. And then they started riffing and working in Cry Me a River into Miss You, and that pissed people off.
Okay.
And so people were chucking bottles at Justin.
Well, and Justin was a big star, but not like he would become. Like,
he wasn't a transcendent star yet.
Right. If he showed up on stage today with the Rolling Stones, people would be like, holy shit, right? Like, I can't believe I'm seeing these two acts together.
Yeah.
At the time, he was still too close to
it. It was
NSYNC.
Like, get off the stage, Justin. What the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
Here? But there was a great moment, and you can find this on YouTube. It's on the DVD that I bought, where the fan throws a water bottle, and I don't think he quite hits Justin, but so close. And then Keith Richards comes up and points at the guy and starts cussing him out. And Justin turns around and flips the fan off, and they got it on camera. And
nice.
it was a great moment in hindsight. But that was one of the ticket stubs that I took a photo of.
Right.
You want to guess how much the ticket cost to see the Rolling Stones, AC/DC, Rush, Tea Party?
Standing room only, 100,000. I bet it's not.
I think it was 490,000 people at the show.
Yeah. I'm going to say, though, the ticket was only $85?
$21.50.
Wild.
Yeah.
That is incredible. And you look at that set. Now, I get it. It's the venue, and you're trying to create this spectacle, right? Well, you're trying to draw a crowd.
All the acts perform for free. The Stones didn't charge to perform.
Yeah, it was the Stones' idea, right? Like, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because they had an affinity for the city, and they had come years and years earlier and, you know, would start their tours there and practice there, whatever you'd call it, prepare there. I guess I'm sort of living in 2024 prices where you'd go $85, no problem, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
$21.
It's funny looking at some of these old ticket stubs. And
well, it's funny you mentioned, you know, the band that you had seen there, the French band there about the
Les Trois Accords.
Yeah, I'm as an old kind of pop punk guy, a punk rock guy, I'm very used to going to shows for the opener, and there have been times where I've left when the opener, I'm there for specifically for, or I'll move to the back closer to the bar or whatever's going on at that point. So I'm used to very cheap concert tickets, $13 to go see Rancid or something like that, or way overpaying, like $65 to go see, really I'm here to see at the time, Anti-Flag. But I have to pay Rise Against prices or whatever it is. So why don't we get to the first one of the three here that, because I know you've put some work into this, you've studied this thing, and otherwise you and I will just end
it's
up going
work.
Back and forth. Well, the first of the three best set lists you ever saw.
My number one on the list.
Yeah.
November 25th, 2012, at BC Place Stadium in Vancouver, Paul McCartney.
Wow. So there's all kinds of questions I have here about the fact that you're in BC to see it. Paul McCartney, what are you out in BC specifically for this concert?
100%.
Yeah.
So my late friend Tyler, he and I had been friends since kindergarten, and he was working out in Alberta and just making crazy money.
Right.
And he was the biggest Bruce Springsteen fan I'd ever met in my life.
Hmm.
And when we'll get to Bruce a little later on, because not too long from now.
Right.
But so we had already seen Springsteen twice on his Wrecking Ball tour that year. And we saw him Toronto and Ottawa. And Bruce was playing in Vancouver on that tour the night after Paul McCartney was playing also in Vancouver. And so Tyler...
a good weekend in Vancouver.
He was at Fort Mac, and he was like, we're going, because Bruce and Paul had just played a show in London in Hyde Park, and they got turned off. Like, they turned the power off when the two of them were in the middle of playing.
I remember that being in the news.
Yeah.
Because they went too late.
Exactly. Yeah. They broke the curfew, and you can't do that in London. You can't do it in Ottawa either.
No.
Unless you're Axl Rose and Guns N' Roses, and you go on at 1 a.m. and just pay the fine. But I was at that show, too. Hired guns. It was just Axel. But
you're like the Forrest Gump of concerts, right? Just turning up all over the place.
Yeah, that's I've been lucky, as I've said. But so there, we were like, there's a chance that with them playing back to back nights, one will join the other on stage.
Yep.
And so Tyler was like, we got to be at both shows. So he got the tickets. He flew me out to Edmonton. And we drove through the Rockies into Vancouver.
Oh, nice.
And a few nights in Vancouver, saw Paul McCartney and Bruce Springsteen back-to-back nights. He really broke the bank on the McCartney tickets. The face value for them, based on my stub, was $650 each. We were seventh row centered.
Holy shit.
And I think he paid probably about $860 each for them.
Wow.
He really spoiled
me. No kidding.
And,
holy shit.
And like made eye contact with McCartney 3-4 times throughout the show. That's how centered we were. And it was unbelievable. Like, honestly, it was, as somebody, as I told you earlier in the pod, like grew up, the Beatles were my dad's favorite band.
Right.
The Beatles, one of my all-time favorite bands. Could listen to a Beatles song and tell you which Beatle was singing. Since I've been about, probably since the age of 7, I've been able to tell you which Beatle was singing the song. And Paul, that day, played 38 songs.
Holy shit, man.
He destroyed the roof of BC Place with the pyrotechnics display during Live and Let Die. And it cost millions of dollars to repair. And again, 38 songs. It was incredible. And
do you have the set list here with you today?
I have the set list with me.
So you don't have to hit us with all of it necessarily. if you got something noteworthy in there that you remember, that's cool. But at least hit us with the very first song that he opened with and what he closed the show with.
So he came out with the Magical Mystery Tour, okay. which is not one of my favorite Beatles songs at all. But like just goosebumps all over. Like Tyler was in tears when Paul McCartney's playing. And it's since become one of my favorite Beatles songs just because of the feeling of like...
Music will do that. It's a time and place.
There's
right?
Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
Like a dozen feet from me.
Right.
And he's singing the Magical Mystery Tour. And I'm here looking at him. Like it was just one of those moments that I'll never forget.
Yeah.
And he closed the show, as you would imagine, with my favorite Beatles song. And there's an asterisk there because it's actually three songs. It's the medley from the end of Abbey Road, where Golden Slumbers carry that weight at the end.
Okay.
And that was, but he did two encores. So some of the songs from the encores: Lady Madonna, Day Tripper, Get Back. That was encore number one.
Mm-hmm.
Encore number two, he played Yesterday solo.
Nice.
Then he brought out the Delta Police Pipe Band and played Mull of Kintyre.
Oh, wow.
Helter Skelter, then Golden Love Slumbers, that carry that weight at the end.
Okay.
And it was just like... It was one of those things that, like, the entire show, I was pinching myself. Because I'm like, I grew up listening to this guy.
Right.
Listening to this guy's band. And you add to the fact, not just that I was able to see them, but that I was lucky enough to be that close.
Yeah.
And there was a little sort of walkway that he came out on at one point where he got even closer. And it was just... unbelievable. And like Live and Let Die was with the pyrotechnics was absolutely a highlight. Like 1985, the Wings song from Band on the Run,
right?
Just absolute, like there were so many great moments. And as I said, 38 songs, so can't run through that entire set
list. No, right?
But man, oh man, and like anytime he go back,
so that's got to be a 3-hour show.
Yeah, it was.
Wild.
It was wild. It's almost like difficult to describe, but like A Day in the Life was incredible. And the other cool thing, and as we've talked about, I was a drummer.
Right.
And so I always have like an affinity for drummers and get dialed in watching drummers. And the drummer in Paul McCartney's band has so much fun playing and really channels that Ringo energy. And so that was a really cool aspect of it, too. But, you know, Paul switching to play piano or playing bass or playing guitar and, you know, busting out the ukulele to play something in honor of George Harrison.
Right.
Honoring John Lennon. Like, all that sort of stuff was just... Yeah, that's my number one. And there I've been to a lot of incredible shows, but it's hard to pick anybody ahead of Sir Paul.
I get that.
What's your number one, Maddie?
Well, I want to ask you first, just quickly, do you remember, I think it was a benefit for Hurricane Sandy. I think this is December of 2012, because I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the hashtag they used was 12-12-12.
Okay.
And it was going to be, and they teased it all the way through, Paul McCartney plays with Nirvana was going to main event this thing in New York City.
The Nirvana, yeah.
Yes. Great. I forgot about that. That's awesome. And I think it all stemmed from Paul McCartney walking into a room, like he was going to be introduced to Dave Grohl, and he knew that much, but Chris Novoselic happened to be there, which was, for people who aren't familiar, you know, the other surviving member of Kurt Cobain's version of Nirvana. And so they're all kind of jamming, but Paul at some point goes, boy, you two really seem to kind of know where each other's going, right? Like you guys have a bit of a, and it's one of his handlers at the time, because he's getting up there a little bit. Well, I guess it's the same year you saw him, 2012.
Yeah.
Kind of whispers in, he's like, this is Nirvana, right? And this is before they had known they were going to play together. So they sort of established this relationship. And I remember sitting through what I thought was just an awful benefit concert. So like there was acts, they're like Kanye was still a thing at the time, and they had like I tend to get into these sort of festivals and these benefits where they have these celebs. I want to watch them
Live 8,
yes, all that.
I
Live Earth,
that.
Yeah, yeah, all of these Oof, I got a terrible live eat story, but but I guess it was there they decided, you know, we should get together, we should jam a little bit, and then later on they find out this thing's going to happen. So that's going to be the headliner or the tag that gets people to come is Paul McCartney's going to play with Nirvana. And I remember sitting through that going, what are they going to do here? Because I can't imagine them trying to Nirvana up a Wings song,
right,
or a Paul McCartney song. And I don't know how Nirvana fans would react to a Paul McCartney led, you know, original Nirvana. So they do come out and they just play a couple of, you know, original things, if I recall correctly, that they had sort of put together. They didn't do, you know, All Apologies or anything like that. They didn't have Paul McCartney.
Lithium.
Yeah, they did not have Paul McCartney sing Smells Like Teen Spirit.
I'm so horny, but that's okay.
Right.
Like, none of that from Paul.
No, but I do remember staying up and going, you know what? I was a little disappointed with what they played, but that was cool, right? Watching these icons in the music industry on stage together for probably the only time you're ever going to see that. But the thing that always makes me remember it more than anything else is the story behind it of someone having to tell him, yeah, you're sitting in a room with Nirvana.
That's Nirvana.
That's Nirvana. Hanging out with right
yeah, I had completely forgotten about that. And then obviously when the Nirvana.
Yes.
And I think probably the reason I forgot it is because what we ended up getting was so underwhelming from a set list performance.
And especially when you hung the whole promotion on it. And that's what I would have hung on it too, right? Like,
but again, it's probably the right mood.
Yeah.
Because you don't want Paul McCartney trying to sing Smells Like Teen Spirit.
No, you don't. Paul McCartney up there yelling, rape me, is not going to go over all that well.
No, probably not.
So I'm going to say to the good listener here up front, I have chosen a little bit to handicap myself on this, and I'll tell you why. And it's happened on two fronts. Just a few weeks ago, Lee Versage and I did a show talking about our favorite hip memories and stuff like that. And that's my favorite band. I've seen them 11 times. And if you ask me to pick my favorite three concerts, even if they were limited to just set list and not vibe, right, not experience, not you know, other things going on around it, I bet you two out of three are hip shows. So I've had to sort of limit that so that I'm not retreading a bunch of things and repeating a bunch of things. And the other, that's not to say you're not going to hear me talk about the hip in this episode, because I'm only human.
I was going to say, I'm going to be really disappointed if
right.
I get some Gord Downie magically hip stuff.
So I have had to limit that. And the other one is Anti-Flag, who was probably my second favorite band for a long time, from high school all the way through. And like I said, I would go and pay, you know, to see Rise Against because, and not that I dislike Rise Against, but because Anti-Flag was opening. I would pay a Green Day price to go see Anti-Flag open when maybe otherwise I wouldn't have.
I once paid a My Chemical Romance price to see Muse.
Right.
Muse was opening for them.
Okay.
And then after I bought the tickets, found out Muse stopped their tour 2 days before the Ottawa show. So now I'm stuck with MCR.
Hate when that happens. Yeah.
So I'm with you with the buying for the opener.
Right. So I've had that. But the other thing, last summer we learned that Justin Sane, the lead singer of Anti-Flag, has been accused by, I believe we're now up to 13 women of some very, very bad shit.
Yeah.
And that has made it difficult for me to celebrate my times with Anti-Flag. So we're talking about now two of my favorite bands sort of being off the table here. But as far as set lists go, as far as experiences go, and, you know, I don't really have mine in a set order. Yeah. But to kind of go along with the Paul McCartney theme, I saw Elton John.
Oh.
In September of 2011 at the General Motors Center in Oshawa, a 5,000-seat building.
Incredible.
It was really cool. And there is a bit of a story behind it I'll get to in a second, but this was an incredibly stripped down show. It's a small stage. They went 360, right? Like put him right out in the middle. It's just him and a piano. And they went, like I said, the full 360 degrees. It is still the record holder event for tickets sold at that arena in Oshawa at 7,600 people. It's meant to hold like 5,200.
Don't call the fire marshal.
Right. But by the time you have this little stage and you get everybody down on the floor and you don't have, you know, normally one of these stages at one end, so everybody who would, they don't sell the seats behind it. In this case, they knew this was a big deal. And I believe The whole story behind it was that at the time, and I don't know if they're still together or not, but his partner, I believe, was from Pickering.
Okay.
And so, you know, he's played the ACC, he's played the Dome, he's whatever. This was meant to be almost like an experience for his partner's family as much as anything else.
Wow.
To play in this little building in Oshawa. And my parents were interested in going. My mom, again, more than my dad, who... you know, could wait in the parking lot listening to Talk 640 for the rest of us to get out of there. But
what's with dads not like liking live shows?
My dad
it does not like live concerts.
Okay. Yeah. No, my dad is just not really feeling it. He'll every now and then. I remember one year for my parents' anniversary, my sisters and I got them tickets because my mom loves Bruce Springsteen. And we had to have this like conversation, my sisters and I, like, we're getting a gift for mom. Are we punishing dad? Like, is this an appropriate anniversary?
With Bruce, it's
gift?
Not a punishment.
I guess.
You could hate music and a Springsteen show you'd still enjoy.
And I think he did. But so for whatever reason, this thing is going to end up in Oshawa, which is my hometown. And it's this little hockey arena. And we end up going, like, we all want to go. Like, my parents' friends want to go. Mm-hmm. My parents want to go. I want to go. My cousins want... like, everybody's... and this ends up... like, good luck getting tickets. Like, they... I think they were, like, $300 to $350, which now is actually somewhat tame, but at the time was unbelievable.
Yeah, 2011, that's...
yeah. And
steep.
And so, my mom has this idea. Well, what if we just... can we rent a suite for the night and invite everybody we want? So, you go down. I went with her for whatever reason. And she's talking to this woman who rents the suites and is in charge of that division of the building. They said, well, obviously the suites are in incredible demand too for a night like this.
Yeah.
Unless you wanted to buy for a year. My mom goes, what else? What comes with that? What's the, it's like, well, you get all the Oshawa Generals. At the time we had the National Basketball League of Canada entering its first year.
What was Oshawa's team name?
The Oshawa Power.
Okay.
We had our logo or our mascot was literally dressed as a Power Ranger, but orange or whatever.
Like, incredible.
We called him the Creamsicle Ranger.
Love that.
Yeah. And we end up buying a suite for a year's worth of Oshawa Generals hockey.
Wow.
So that we can get tickets to see Elton John in the box. Now, we're hockey fans in my family. So it was fine. Like, the box got used. And there were some other good concerts. Like, my sisters are still to this day huge country music fans. Terry Clark was one of the big things that came in there. That year, Megadeth and Motorhead played a show. So I took some buddies down to that, right? Like, the box got used. But in terms of trying to buy concert tickets for one night, they upsold us into having a suite for the year. Yeah, we bit hook, line, and sinker. But we went to that show. You know, a bunch of my parents' friends were there, and he was incredible. Like, a stripped down show, him and a piano, that was it. And he played everything you would expect him to play, and in like that kind of showbiz style, he would stand up after, or in that classical piano style, he'd stand up after like every 3-4 songs, kind of turn and bow and point to the crowd and kind of wave and acknowledge, let everybody get some pictures. And the thing that stands out more than anything else is he goes to play Benny and the Jets, but he can't get there anymore, right? His voice can't get up there anymore. So he would kind of sit back in that moment and let the crowd get up there for him. Oh. And that was so fun. Everyone, we're up in the suites and we're doing it, right? Like, everybody's giving her...
Benny!
Yeah, all of it, man. It was, yeah, so it was incredible. And he's just one of those names that, like, am I a huge Elton John guy? No, but if Elton John's coming to my hometown, do I want to be there? Of course I do, right? Put that on the list of great acts that I've seen. You know, it was a really, really cool. I think he finished with Crocodile Rock. That was kind of...
could he hit those notes?
Yeah, he was doing... He was not doing that part anymore either.
No,
he would hit it kind of down an octave, right?
Yeah.
And so, but he would leave a lot of things to the crowd. But just seeing that guy in a venue that small was awesome.
Yeah, that's incredible. Elton's one that I haven't seen. And this is a conversation that my wife and I have a lot, and it's the Tom Petty rule for her,
right?
Because I was at that Tom Petty Blues Fest show okay. A few months before he passed away. Yeah. She didn't go.
Oh.
And it's been a big regret for her of not taking the opportunity.
Yeah.
And so we have conversations of who have you not seen that you would love to see?
Yeah.
And I haven't seen Elton John, and that seems to me like it was the way to see him.
Yeah.
Because I love old school Elton John.
Yeah.
Like the early days, Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatters, Take Me to the Pilot, like Burn
he's
Down
playing
the Mission.
Tony Danza, right? Everybody loves that. We're in our suite, everybody's singing the Tony Danza
the Tony
version.
Danza version.
But all of that, like
his voice changed.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah.
and so it was one of those things where I wasn't as desperate to see him on his farewell tour and stuff,
right,
just because his voice changed. But it feels to me like that sort of situation, that intimate a group, would have been just absolutely unbelievable.
How's your beer? We got
my beer is empty.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, we hit a little more preamble than was expected, but that should have been expected. We'll take a break here. We'll grab another beer.
I'm sorry, Maddie.
That is a two-way street in this studio. So we'll take a break here, grab another pint. We'll be back to get into the rest of some of these concerts.